WFAE streaming is sponsored by Corporate Information Technologies, a local IT company assisting business and taking a proactive approach to technology. CIT, let us show you how good IT can be. corp-infotech.com.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. We begin with a spoiler alert. If you have already voted, you may want to turn the radio off for an hour as we take a near final look at the various political contests to be decided on Election Day, because we wouldn't want you to second guess yourself. But everyone else should listen and join in as we spend the hour with Dr. Michael Bitzer, the brains behind WFAE's Party Line blog and associate professor of politics and history and chair of the department at Catawba College. We're going to talk about the races, what's happening with various candidates, the impact of early voting, and more. Welcome back.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. Have you voted yet?
I have not. I'm going to talk about early voting, but I'm a little bit of a traditionalist. I will go. I figured nobody else will be showing up on election day, so I can just walk in, punch the buttons, and walk out.
That's kind of how it was last year, because I voted on election day.
It was, yeah.
Because I'm afraid I'm going to pull the lever and walk out and hear the news and go, why did I do that? There were three presidential debates. The first was a disaster for the president. He seemed to recover a little bit in the next mm-hmm. two debates, but it really seemed to help his rival, Mitt Romney.
Yeah.
Has the president recovered in terms of poll numbers or in terms of people's confidence in him since that first debate? Has Mitt Romney bought himself an everlasting ticket to goodness?
I think so, on all occasions. I think the president, certainly in the second debate, came out three Red Bulls and about five espresso shots will definitely wake somebody up. And somebody did that before that second debate. Even he recognized that he needed to step up his game. He couldn't take it for granted. And I think what Mitt Romney basically did was he made the race tied. I mean, we are talking nationally 47-47. You can't say one person is ahead by 1 point or back behind by 1 point, because it's all within the margin of error. And we're at a 47-47 split.
And how much of that has to do with the debates and the performance in the debates and the images put forth by the two candidates in those debates? And how much of it has to do with the Barack Obama's unpopularity or the unpopularity of his policies or the fact that we're in the doldrums in the economy after 4 years? What's it due to?
I think both sides are beyond energized. They have been ready to vote for several weeks now. We've finally gotten a week's worth of early voting here in North Carolina. The predominant numbers are heavy Democrat, heavy Republican, unaffiliateds not showing up, which is not unusual. They're probably going to wait till the last minute. But I think, you know, both sides, this is, in my opinion, a base year election. And yeah, we talk about the swing voters, we talk about the persuadables. It is much more important to get your adherents and your supporters out. And I think both sides have done it. Republicans have been very impressed with Mitt Romney's debate performances. And I think any kind of lasting, lingering questions about him probably were put aside because he went so aggressive against the president.
He also seems to be picking up women. Women were mm-hmm. pretty much in the Obama camp, we are told, by polls up until these debates. What has been the reason for that movement in the female vote toward Romney?
I think, you know, for a lot of the polls, I think what we're seeing is potential gender gap going on. I mean, we always recognize that women are going to vote Democratic, men are going to vote predominantly Republican. But I think
why?
It is, I think, a little bit more of the ideological perspective. I think women tend to be much more moderate, particularly on social issues. Men tend to be much more conservative in their perspective. So they kind of line up nicely with the parties as well. I mean, the parties have become ideologically coherent. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, if you're a conservative, the likelihood is you're going to identify as a Republican. If you're a liberal, you are definitely going to vote, you know, align yourself with the mm-hmm. Democrats. I think just in terms of gender politics, and I'm certainly not the expert on this, but I think that that kind of moderate tone among women, particularly when it comes to issues like social concerns, It tends to bring them more into that.
So getting back to their shift toward Mitt Romney, why?
I think it's just the natural component of this year's very tight election. I just think people are evenly divided.
But women's issues have been front and center in this campaign.
Yeah.
I'm not sure who to attach responsibility for that to, but the Republicans put it in their platform, a lot of these issues.
They did.
And very conservative versions of these issues.
And the president's campaign, If you listen to some of the comments coming out, particularly out of the Indiana Senate race, they are trying to tie Mitt Romney to Richard Murdoch, who made, again, the very unfortunate comment about even if a woman is pregnant after a rape, that pregnancy should be protected.
Mm-hmm.
The president's going to be playing off of women's issues consistently over the next week and a half.
Is he running out of time?
I think there is still some time in some states, but, I mean, states like Ohio, it is very close. It seems to be leaning towards the president, but Mitt Romney has got to run the tables in certain scenarios in the Electoral College. We can talk about the national polls all we want. Mm-hmm. The action is in about six states.
NPR ran a story yesterday afternoon on All Things Considered about the impact of television commercials, political television commercials at this stage of the game, particularly I think it was in the state of Nevada, where perhaps they have reached the point of diminishing returns, where now there's so many of them.
Saturation.
That people are just ticked off whenever they see them and maybe switching their vote to the other side because they're angry that their candidate is so negative.
Yeah.
talk about that for a second. Do you think that holds any water? People are actually doing that?
I think there could certainly be that for some voters. I think negative ads, you know, do present some information, and some political scientists believe that they are a contributory towards information gaining by the voters. I think that there's also the potential that if you attack my candidate, I'm going to get ticked off and I'm going to show you I'm going to actually show up to vote. Mm. So there can be a backfire effect as well going on. So I think, you know, we are seeing overwhelming negative ads. I mean, the Washington Post, I think, says anywhere above 90% of all the ads run have been classified as negative.
Can't they be positive? What would the impact be if a candidate for president or governor, and because Pat McCrory says
mm-hmm.
that he has run nothing but positive ads, that he has run no negative ads. Is that a winning strategy?
I think when you're 13 points ahead, you can make that decision to go positive. When it is a 47-47 split, you not only need to clearly enunciate your positions, but you need to make yourself different from the other guy. And the easiest way to do that is to sling as much mud and say, look how dirty he is.
But isn't that politics as usual?
Sure.
Is that the hope and change we wished for?
Hope is a four-letter word, like so many others, so you have to be careful what you wish for.
All right. The race, as you have said, is squeaky close. you said 47-47 last night. I saw it off by 1 point between the two of them, and I think it was Mitt Romney in the clear there. When it's all said and done on November 7th, if all
we
the
hope.
Votes are – well, that's true. It may go
Let's
longer
hope.
Than that.
Yeah.
Well, what are the chances of it not ending on November 7th or when the votes are counted on the evening of November 6th? What's the chance of it going on for a week or 2 days or 3 days?
I think probably a day and a half, 2 days,
really?
Just because of the amount of votes that we're going to be dealing with.
And
in a state like Ohio, if it's within, I believe, half a percentage point difference, that then kicks in an automatic recount.
Do you think it will do that, or do you think it's possible that it will happen?
It's possible. I would not put a high percentage on it, but you know, in this year's campaign, we have seen literally everything conceivable happen.
Mm-hmm.
Why not?
You want to give us a prognostication on the presidential race?
I think it will be, if it's anything more than 51.5 for the victor nationally, maybe 52, but nothing over that. Electorally, it could be a squeaker. It could be 271 to 267.
Well, as of yesterday, on the 538 website. Yep. That's Nate Silver's political calculus column for the New York Times. It showed President Obama with 288.3 electoral votes to Romney's 249.7. You need 270 to win. If those numbers prove to be correct, and do you have it this morning?
Yeah, I actually have got this morning, 290.8 to 247.2.
So Obama is rising.
Rose 3.5.
To what would you attribute that increase?
He runs a very statistically based model to do this. He takes into factors like the economy, economic factors, the stock market, but then also majority of the polls. And within the states, I mean, he's showing the president leading in Ohio, Virginia, New Hampshire, Iowa, Colorado, Nevada.
Does that mean he's won? Because of
it's
those, because of the electoral college.
If that's the scenario, if the president holds those states, he can lose North Carolina, he can lose Florida. It's done.
So that number again this morning is
290.8. So call it 290.
Okay, you need 270 win in electoral college world.
Yeah. Which is a whole other
right?
world. We're talking about a different universe.
That's
here.
Right. Is it considered a close win?
Last time he got 365.
Wow.
And but we went through a change in the rules of the game because we shifted electoral votes because of the census and reapportionment. So he would have won, let's see, he would have won 359, excuse me. So he has a cushion.
Okay. But the popular vote is liable to be a hair's breadth.
Oh. Completely.
So what does that mean? And because either of them in the popular vote could win, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
Is it conceivable that Mitt Romney could win the popular vote and by a hair, and the president could still win the election because of the Electoral College?
Let's see. Romney wins. This is Nate Silver. Mm-hmm. Romney wins popular vote but loses Electoral College. He gives it about a 5.6% chance.
Mm-hmm.
It could be.
If that
possible.
Happens, what does that mean? The president wins, but
the president wins.
What does that mean for the next 4 years?
Honestly, for the next 4 years, I don't see very much changing out of our polarized environment.
Even if the president takes the popular vote by a hair and the Electoral College,
yeah.
He has no mandate. Neither man would have a mandate.
Neither man would have a mandate. And more importantly, the Senate is going to be probably a 51-49 tie or a potential 50-50 tie. Don't have 60 votes to really advance a true agenda. Mm-hmm. So we are going to be either in a holding pattern or somebody on both sides is going to have to say, we're going to compromise.
Is this healthy for the country? Is this something we can afford to spend another 4 years at loggerheads with each
at
other?
At each other's throats. About 50 years ago, political scientists wrote that we need two parties that are different from one another. They lamented the fact that there wasn't a dime's worth of difference between Democrats and Republicans.
Right.
We've got more than a dime's worth of difference now.
Mm-hmm. They're different currencies now.
They are very different currencies. different presidents on the bills.
That's right.
It is politically healthy, but it is a strain on the willingness of people to work together, I think.
But we have big time decisions that we have to come up with.
Monumental.
With in the next yeah. several years and actually by the end of the year. In this case,
yeah.
I mean, this is a system designed to be slow, but is it now becoming impossibly slow?
Well, it's a system designed to promote conflict. I mean, you don't divide power up,
right.
But it's also designed to promote compromise, and that's what we don't have.
Okay. Dr. Michael Bitzer is with us, associate professor and chair of the Department of Politics and History at Catawba College and WFAE's blogger, The Party Line Blog. We're coming right back. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Bylo Supermarket, serving the Southeast for over 50 years, featuring Full Circle products, Bylo's complete line of natural and organic foods. Store locator and fuel perks program details at buy-low.com. And Signature Healthcare, a concierge medical practice serving the Charlotte region since 2003, providing patients with 24/7 physician access, individualized attention, and same-day appointments. SignatureHealthcare.org. Mandy Patinkin is a star of Broadway, of film, of television, and the concert stage. He actually lives here now, you know, because they are filming Homeland here, of which he is the star. And he's kind of adopted Charlotte as his home. And as a little gift, he's welcoming us into his living room, the Belk Theater, on Sunday night at 7:30 for his one-man show. We spend the hour with him tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, some say voter fraud is a serious threat to our democratic process. Others argue the problem is extremely rare. Allegations of voter fraud in 2012.
Join the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Dr. Michael Bitzer, our guest from Catawba College. He is also the person responsible for WFAE's Party Line political blog at WFAE.org. As these campaigns have unfolded and as we go into the home stretch, are there messages? What are the messages that you're hearing from both candidates that seem to be having an impact, that seem to be resonating?
I think the Romney campaign has certainly made an effective message of around the idea of, are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? And can we expect any change if we continue under the current policy? I think, you know, and that's something that resonates with people, I think, with the average voter. Certainly it's going to appeal to Republicans. It's going to turn off Democrats. But, you know, the folks in the middle that seem to be independents, but split very nicely down the middle for both sides. I think there's some real questions.
Well, the president's rejoinder is, do you want to go back to the policies that got us into this mess in the first place? And I need more time because and some analysts will say, yes, anybody would need more time because it takes about 10 years to get out of these major financial collapses that we have from time to time.
And it took us 20 years to get into the hole that we were in.
Okay. So is that message having any bounce for him, or is that just a loser message to begin with?
Well, it's not a loser message, but the lack of specifics, I think, is disconcerting to some people.
But isn't
and that's
there a
why
lack-
he sent out that brochure 2 days ago now saying, here's exactly what I want to do, when he was criticized in the debates for not offering the kind of specifics that people wanted.
Why didn't he? If he had a brochure printed and mailed out, why didn't he share that information
in the debates?
Because I didn't get
campaign strategy that I really don't understand, but needed to be done well in advance of 2 weeks out.
He keeps saying, President Obama keeps saying, that Mitt Romney has not offered any specifics. So where are the specifics on that side? Are there any? Have I missed them?
It's questionable. There are some real concerns about Romney's tax plans and proposals about how he would conceivably fund those, along with increasing defense spending. As well as tackling the debt. So, I mean, there are a lack of specificity all over the place on both sides. But it is more incumbent on, I think, the person in power to say exactly what he would want to continue, rather than the challenger say, and it's the typical approach, you know, always criticizing those in power.
Democrats point to Mitt Romney and ask, which Romney? Saying that he has changed his position on just about every issue that was a key issue, and agreed with the president much of the time during the foreign policy debate that took place last week. Republicans say Obama does not deserve a second term because he hasn't made enough improvement economically in the first 4 years and has no firm plan. We just talked about that, except for more of the same for the next term. And they also claim that his foreign policy is weak, and they point to Benghazi as one of the examples of that. Yeah. Do both sides have points?
I think so. I mean, I think realistically, as somebody who tries to objectively look at this campaign, I think there are valued points on both sides and valid criticisms on both sides.
I think you'd have to be blind if you did not see the switch in positions or the softening of position on the part of Mitt Romney on many issues. So how is that being viewed by the right?
I think they have come to begrudgingly accept Romney's approach in order to get him into the White House, because I think they are much more concerned about not having Obama in there than they are necessarily about, you know,
well, you know,
their man
4 years. And this goes back to the 80s, I think, the religious right was promised lots of things by Republicans who then got into the White House and didn't do anything they promised.
Well, most recently in a George W. Bush.
So at what point do they have to say, wait a minute, hold on here, you're switching positions yet again and you haven't even gotten to the White House?
I know. It's we have to recognize that modern political parties are coalitions and they are different factions, and different factions fight with each other to get the prominence, and they're not going to get everything that they ideally want. They oftentimes have to invoke trust into their political candidates. I mean, look at the left in the Democratic Party really wanted Obama to do some things that he was not able to adequately push in terms of, you know, most notably health care, the Health Care Reform Act. They thought it was much too moderate, much too, you know, middle of the road. They wanted some more liberal approaches to health care. They were not happy with the president. I think they've, you know, begrudgingly said, we've got to support this guy because we don't want the alternative.
After the last debate, CNN's John King said that we should look, we the voters, we the citizens, we the people, should look for the two campaigns to decide which states to give up on and which of the must-win states, like Ohio, they should continue to concentrate on. And we could realize what they were doing by watching the disappearance of TV commercials in those markets that they're giving up on and the fact that the candidates are no longer visiting. Has that begun to happen?
I think so. I think, you know, North Carolina, I think, has kind of moved out of the spotlight. I think the universe rests in Ohio. For November 6th, all eyes will be on Ohio.
And we keep hearing from pundits that no Republican has ever won the White House without winning Ohio. Does that really matter? I mean, yes, it's happened every time in the past, but really, does that matter?
It's a happenstance, but there is a path through the Electoral College potentially for Romney to get there without Ohio, but he has to pull a spectacular hand of running states like New Hampshire, Nevada, Colorado, Wisconsin, Virginia, all of these states where it seems like the president is leading in. If he can pull that, yeah, he can get to 271 in the low 270s. There's also a potential scenario, and I'm loath to speak of it, but there is a potential where a 269-269 tie happens and the president wins Ohio. Romney wins basically everything else except New Hampshire. Then where do we go?
Where do we go?
Well, we go to the U.S. House.
The U.S. House, which is Republican.
Which every state gets one vote. So you have to take the state delegations and basically whichever party controls the congressional delegations gets that vote. And then in the U.S. Senate, each senator gets a vote the vice president.
Say that again?
The Senate picks the vice president. House picks the president.
So you're telling me there's a possibility in that scenario that we could have Mitt Romney and Joe Biden together?
I'm saying there's like a 0.5%, which is why I was loath to mention it.
Has this ever happened before?
1824 was the last time that the House picked John Adams, I believe it was. So it's been some time, and we always talk about this every 4 years.
Right.
There's some other possibilities. Nebraska awards its electoral votes by congressional districts. Barack Obama won one of those Nebraska congressional districts. If you line the states up right and have that one vote go to Obama instead of Romney, there's another potential. But this is all minuscule.
Unlike 2000, this would not go to the Supreme Court. It would go to Congress. It went to the Supreme Court in 2000 because of
issues in Florida. In Florida. In terms of counting the ballots.
Could that happen again? So could we have an issue like that again? Not in Florida, not with Chads at least, because they've gotten rid of those
They've
paper
gotten
ballot
rid
things.
Of – we will hopefully never hear Chads again. But sorry to the listeners who are named Chad. I think this is – if we are talking about a 51-49 split – both sides are going to look very closely at what's going in a variety of states and say, where can we make our case to recount? And this is only going to further inflame the passions on both sides, and it could be another rip at the seam of our civility in our society, and I would be very concerned about pushing that envelope way too hard.
Because of what? What would the outcome be if we had a further tear in the fabric?
Continued distrust of our governmental institutions, which are already at record low levels. But
Of that is being driven by the Republican Party, who keeps telling people through Rush Limbaugh that government is bad?
I think that certainly reinforces perspectives on the hard right side of the political spectrum. When you have voices with bullhorns that are so loud to stir up the passions and confirm what they already suspect, even though that confirmation may be based on misleading information, I worry sometimes that people are only looking at things through their partisan lens, and when they are confronted with challenges, they are unwilling to accept those challenges.
I don't recall there being a lot of talk about fact checkers in the 60s or the 70s or even the 80s, even the 90s, as the result of campaign assertions and presidential debates. They've come into being now because we have shows like The Daily Show, who seem to be there. They have their own fact checkers, and also because we have to have this back and forth. He lied.
Right.
How would you assess the facts that have been floating around in this campaign? Are there big whoppers out there? Are there just a bunch of little venial sins being told? I mean, what's going on here?
What surprises me in this year's campaign is that both sides take the same nugget
and twist it
and completely pull threads out of it to say, aha, see, I told you this guy is a liar or this guy is untrustworthy.
Is that because there's so little difference between the two that they have to
manipulate the facts? No. There is huge differences.
Okay.
But they are looking for every opportunity to present the other side in an either unflattering or distrustful light. And I think they are willing to grasp onto anything that they can conceivably present and say, this is the truth. And wow.
You study this historically. And I'm just curious as to whether or not there's a side that has an advantage in this way of doing business. And I ask because it appears to me, as a layperson and not a professor, that the left has this laissez-faire attitude. Their whole philosophy is, let me do my thing, you can do your thing, and as long as we don't bother each other and nobody gets hurt, it's fine. Whereas the right side of the equation has a vested interest. They really want their view of the world to be the dominant view, and they are vested in seeing that happen. I'm not criticizing them for that. I'm just saying that seems to be what it is. So if you really have this drive to make your view the dominant one, and on the other side you got this, oh, I don't know, maybe we'll put my feet whatever. Up and it'll be fine, whatever.
Yeah.
You're going to lose, aren't you?
I think so, and I think we have to look at it from an ideological point of view in terms of conservatives believe in conserving what is currently in the society.
They are very
vested in it. They are very suspicious of change. Mm-hmm. And I think what is happening to our country is we are going through a change that I liken to the late 1800s with the change from an agrarian-based society to an industrial-based society. And you had tremendous flux going on. You had people who were scared. You mean I've got to go from the fields to the factory now? I don't know what to do in the factory. Somebody's got to tell me what to do. We're seeing that with technology move as well. And I think whenever we go through this transitory period, people are very suspicious of change. They don't like it, but it's being forced upon us. Mm-hmm. And so conservatives rise up to say, we need to conserve what we already know has worked in the past. Let's not change. And that plays into that adaptability, that flexibility that you kind of addressed in terms of others looking at, I'm willing to change with the times, and others are not.
In these waning days of the election, these mercifully waning days of the
election, finally here.
Billy Graham has surfaced. He appears to be endorsing Mitt Romney for president, and according to an article in The Observer examining whether these are his opinions or those of his son Franklin, they pointed out that he was allegedly disturbed by the Democrats not including God in their initial version of their party platform. They later amended that to include God. I'm sure that God thanks them for that. Has Billy Graham ever gotten involved in endorsing candidates in the past? And has am I remembering this incorrectly, that he did get pretty close to Richard Nixon and then publicly stated that he regretted that, and he will never do it again.
Yeah, I think, you know, we also have to remember that certain voters who are typically evangelical, you know, very, very religious in nature, have become much more identified with one party over the other. Mm-hmm. And so when Billy Graham or his son Franklin says, you know, we need to support a candidate that upholds biblical values and beliefs, that's a very clear signal of which of the two parties conceivably you should be supporting. And even though they didn't come out and say support Republicans, that is the party that is best identified and most identified with that kind of voter. And so it's in when I heard it, I thought, you know, he didn't say it, but he said it.
Mm. We're going to shift to North Carolina now. The last gubernatorial debate was last night.
Yes.
We spoke with Walter Dalton yesterday for an hour on this program. We spoke with Barbara Howe, the Libertarian candidate, mm-hmm. last week. We spoke with Pat McCrory, the Republican, 2 weeks ago. Did you watch these debates?
I did.
Which did not include Barbara Howe.
Right.
The Association of Broadcasters decided that she wasn't going to be, and I think that's a very bad decision. But do these debates have any impact on the outcome of gubernatorial elections in North Carolina?
I would be surprised if a lot of people tuned in to these debates. Two of them were held on presidential debate nights, and so they kind of got overshadowed by what was going on in the first and in the second presidential debate. Last night's debate, it seemed like things were a little bit calmer than the second debate. Walter Dalton certainly came out in the second debate much more aggressive because he knew he has a huge hill to climb in order to make this thing competitive. Pat McCrory, by all accounts, is in the lead, very solid. Double digits in the polls.
Would Walter Dalton be ahead, further ahead than he is now, if he hadn't had to fight three other people in the primary? If he had been the clear-cut choice of the Democrats from the get-go?
I would be surprised if he was, to be quite honest. I think this is pretty much it seems like it's fitting into the 2008 presidential election in that everybody is just kind of turned off of the party in power, and that's the Democrats. They're, you know, Bev Perdue continues to have tremendous disapproval ratings. I think people are just looking for change, mm-hmm. and McCrory has set his campaign around that theme. And that seems to be working.
As I said, Barbara Howell, the Libertarian candidate, was excluded from these debates. And I think that she claims that she had – there are certain numbers that you have to achieve in order to be considered. And she claims to have had those numbers and then was just discounted and they moved on without her. Should she have been excluded, or should we have had the opportunity to hear from a third-party candidate in these debates?
You know, we do have Libertarians. We do have voters who are registered Libertarian. Certainly, it's a presentation of other views, but I'm not sure in the end that would necessarily make a big difference.
Dr. Michael Bitzer, our guest from Catawba College. We will continue in a moment, and we'll take some calls and share some emails when we continue Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and historic Brattonsville's Civil War battle reenactment. This weekend, attendees can experience cannon firing demonstrations, camp life activities, cavalry presentations, and military drills. chmuseums.org. And Scott Jaguar, offering drivers the combination of classic Jaguar performance with advanced automotive technologies. Information on the Jaguar experience online at scottjag.com or at Scott Jaguar at I-77 and Tivola. Republicans are pushing efforts to crack down on voter fraud, but others say the problem is extremely rare. Debate over the scope of voter fraud and what's being done to prevent it, the topic at 10 on The Diane Reams Show. And if you'd like to join our conversation, 704-926-WFAE. That's 704-926-9323, 800-603-WFAE, or online, wfae.org/Charlotte Talks. We're coming right back.
Business news. It's not all banks, budgets, and bottom lines, you know. At Marketplace, we think it can be lots of things, like...
So, maybe you've heard of the Kardashians.
iPhone and iPad apps.
Christian Dior.
Wine.
We Fit.
Amazon and Barnes & Noble.
The NFL.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Whether you need news or the numbers or just a good laugh, join us next time for Marketplace, the business show for the rest of us. It's from APM, American Public Media.
Marketplace this evening at 6:30 on 90.7 WFAE.
Hey, Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Dr. Michael Bitzer is Associate Professor and Chair of the Department of Politics and History at Catawba College in Salisbury and the head guy of the WFAE Party Line blog. Are you the only guy?
I think so.
Okay. We were talking about libertarians a second ago, and I just want to spend 2 seconds on this because I asked Barbara Howe. She's run for office many times. I think this is her second or third shot at the governor's race. She's run for the state house or state senate. She's run for the U.S. House or the U.S. Yeah. Senate, I've forgotten which, and never won. But to her credit, she keeps running because it's not easy to run for any of these offices.
No.
And she's been to every county in the state. She's run a 5K in every county in the state. There are 100 counties in the state. And in some of these counties, she's run 2 5Ks or 3Ks or whatever the heck it is. But in the end, she doesn't win. And I asked her, well, you know, a lot of your policies, a lot of your positions sound very much like Republican positions. Mm-hmm. Some of them sound like Democratic positions. Mm-hmm. Positions. Why don't you just run once as a Republican or a Democrat, get in, and then start acting? And she said, because I have to be true to myself. Yeah. I am not a Republican. I am not a Democrat. I am a libertarian. And I don't want to pull the wool over the eyes of the voters, and I'm certainly not kidding myself. So
very commendable.
Yes, exactly. What then is the role of a libertarian or a libertarian candidate, not just her, if they can't get elected?
I think it's certainly to continue to raise the issues. I mean, libertarians strongly believe that the best form of government is the least form of government, particularly when it comes to both economics and social issues. You know, for economic issues, Democrats believe government should be involved in the economy. On social issues, Republicans believe that the government should be involved in social issues. And so you've got this weird mix of both parties representing different strands and kind of the flip opposite. Libertarians are very much government out of the economy, government out of social issues. And so they support things like gay marriage, legalized marijuana for particularly medical use, but also the government staying out of regulating businesses and the private sector. So it's a strand that's certainly evident in American political history, but it's never quite captured the imagination of a large swath of the country.
Are people who identify as libertarian and then decide to run for office wasting their time? Are people who identify as libertarian and go to the voting booth wasting their time? Or would they be better served simply by saying, okay, it's a two-party country. I'm going to swallow some of this on the Republican side, or I'm going to swallow some of this on the Democratic side and be one of these guys?
I in terms of the candidacy, I can never say that somebody offering themselves up as a public servant and going through what they have to go through is not worthy. I mean, I think we need more of that. Mm-hmm. In terms of the realism of the voting aspect, we've got to remember that we're first past the post, meaning if you get one more vote than the person who comes in second, you win. It's not a majority system. It's a plurality system. And what third parties tend to do is take away votes from one party, and we oftentimes tend to elect the person we least like.
We had a caller who held on for a very long time and couldn't continue to hold, but he wanted to know what you think about the accuracy of statements by Governor Romney and even President Obama during the debates about fact checks, I guess. He wanted to know who had the most things incorrect or who had the most things correct?
Oh, boy.
Do you know?
I don't know right offhand, but I know that there were some stretches of the extreme truth on both sides. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, when you've only got 2 minutes to answer questions, you know, that does not set up. We had real debates. We had real challenging ideas from different perspectives. But when you get into that scenario and you don't know what the question is, I've moderated candidate forms. Yeah. I'm impressed that people are able to get up and say coherent right. sentences on their position.
The other thing about all of this is the world is so intensely complicated now that even if you didn't have the two-minute time limit, if you really went into the reasons behind the policies that you're suggesting or the things that you have done, you could spend 45 minutes on it and people's eyes would glaze over. They wouldn't understand it.
Oh, they wouldn't last 45 minutes. You know, they'd either be asleep or is there a football game or a baseball?
Right.
Is the baseball game on?
Yeah.
They'd flip the channel.
Okay. Let's go to Tom in York, South Carolina. Tom, you're on with Dr. Michael Bitson.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
I'd like to ask the gentleman, first of all, truth. Doesn't truth matter anymore? Obama's not a Nazi or an illegal alien. Then what is it that people don't remember about the filibusters that the Republicans have been doing, filibustering everything the president has tried to do, you know? And third, what percentage of the population would you think is either totally uninformed, misinformed, non-informed?
Well, to give you a clue on that...
It's just remarkable.
I know. One of the network television newscasts did a poll, a man-on-the-street poll, and they asked the question, who won the debate last night between the first ladies?
Yeah.
And people said, well, you know, I think that Ann Romney or I think that Mrs. Obama won. I only caught a few minutes of it because I had other things to do. But
yeah.
I mean, were they just – they're lying. Were they lying or were they self-deluded?
They don't want to appear ignorant.
Ignorant, but they are. So what does that mean about that?
the engagement – in civic aspects of our society is lacking.
Why? And this must drive you crazy as a political scientist.
It does, but rationally, when you've got a kid and you're trying to put dinner on the table before 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock at night, and they've got homework and they've got football practice, and you've got a 60-hour work week and you're concerned about things – realistically, do you have the time to sit down and do all the work that truly needs to be done
but
to understand the complex issues that we're facing?
But if your job is in jeopardy or you haven't had a raise in 5 years and the cost of living is going up and gasoline is $5 a gallon at the pump, why wouldn't you want to pay attention to people who might be able to do something about this?
You can easily use the cues that they send, and that is the political party that they are affiliated with. We have very clear differences, and you know, if you say I'm a Democrat, you're typically going to vote Democratic. I'm a Republican, I'm going to vote Republican, because that's the safe nature. That's the quick cue. That's the shortcut for voters to say, okay, who are these guys? Well, they're one party or the other. I'm with that party, so I must vote for that guy.
Okay. Tom, thank you. I hope we answered your question. Jim on Facebook, as a voter, when it comes to a candidate running for office, particularly the highest office of president, I find it unreasonable that they would not release a good chunk of their tax returns and expect me to vote for and or trust them, particularly in Governor Romney's case when he did give McCain 2 decades worth of returns and only gives me, as a voter, 1 year. That 1 year disclosure coming after pressure in the GOP primaries and that year and his latest returns leave many with lots of concerns regarding Swiss and Cayman Island accounts and offshoring jobs by his business interests. That's on the one hand. On the other hand, you have Donald Trump, who continues to badger the president for evidence of what? His birth certificate and his passport.
Now, and has offered transcripts.
Yes, and has offered a monetary award of $5 million for the president. If I were the president, I take him up on it. Give me the $5 million. Here it is. No. If you are the president, why wouldn't you do that at this
point? Well, you don't want
to. Just end it. Make a fool out of him.
Because then he's going to ask for his kindergarten transcripts.
That's okay, but you'll really be $5 million richer.
Well, and you know what? I heard some folks say, you know what? The president should take him up on it, take that $5 million, and have him donate it to Planned Parenthood, which would just send the other side into
What about Mitt Romney's tax returns, getting back to the question of the listener?
I think, you know, the concern that Americans have is the continued extreme wealth controlled by a very small percentage of our country, you know, witness the 99%, the Wall Street, Occupy Wall Street crowd. We still have a very deep suspicion of people that have a lot of money, but we always want to be like that person who has a lot of money. So it's a kind of, I would say, give and take. You know, you're suspicious, but you want to be like them. So I think that's just the natural part of the campaign.
All right. Let's go to Hank in Charlotte. Welcome, Hank.
Hi. How are you today?
Good.
I just had one comment in listening to your commentary, and I have a problem with the way that you're, the nature of the way you shade your language and the way that you frame questions and more or less place party positions one way or the other, to in which you indirectly criticize one party and would it be appearing to take a very sort of biased approach about what that party actually stands for or what they actually would like to achieve. And so I won't get into any specifics of which party I'm referring to, but I think that your bias sometimes comes true as pervasive, and you should just disclose if you are totally in favor of one political party over the other. And I think it comes clear where you stand on that. But it's not necessarily stated forthrightly.
Well, you're talking to me, I take it, not to Dr. Bitzer.
I would say that I know the way that I vote, and I know the way that I evaluate issues, and then the way that you describe my mentality or my thought process, mm-hmm. I find somewhat insulting.
Well, I apologize for that if I have offended you. However, I think I try to be equally tough on both sides. And I try to play devil's advocate on both sides of the issue. And it may not come across that way, but that's what I'm trying to do here.
No, but I would say to you then is that when you start to outline what you consider to be a Republican position, mm-hmm. and then you either denigrate it or cast it into a very simplistic perception of what that policy is, then you are really distorting that. You're not really not showing bias in that.
Well, I think I do the same thing to the Democrats, but maybe not. Dr. Bitzer, you've been listening to the questions. I've been throwing them at you. What do you give me your critique?
I think the caller represents what a lot of true partisans believe, and that is that they have a certain framework that they see the world. And when things are challenged, when the issues, the questions don't line up in their perspective, they tend to increase the level of distrust of the individual. There was a fascinating study by a political scientist at Emory who said, you know, we like to think of ourselves as rational, logical thinkers. And when we're presented with contradictory information challenging our viewpoints, our brain actually invokes emotion and passion to say, that's not really true. And the brain actually kind of turns it into supporting their perspective. I think what we've gotten into is both sides believe very firmly in their perspective. And, you know, I try and look at things as an individual who is registered unaffiliated, not with any political party. I still have not decided who I'm voting for, so I will be upfront about that. And I think reflective of our polarization, we tend to see this. I get it from both sides as well. I get Republicans chastising me. I get Democrats chastising me. And I have to say, you know, if I'm ticking off both sides, I'm doing my job.
Okay.
But that's the way I do it in my classroom.
Hank,
as well.
Thank you for your call. Patrick, on our website, in our history, how common is it for the national races to come down to razor-thin margins? Do we have a natural tendency to be a 50-50 country?
We typically have not, but in modern times, since the end of the World War II, I believe about 50% of all the races have been razor edge. I mean, 52, 48 or closer.
Mark emails, as a previously elected city councilman, as a libertarian, county chair, I would like to say it is not a waste of candidates and voters who are libertarians running for office and voting. As an elected libertarian on a 7-person city council, I was able to enact many changes to the budget, to policy, mm-hmm. and to ordinances. The reason being that as a libertarian, I could get 3 Republicans to vote with me on fiscal issues and 3 Democrats to vote with me on personal freedom issues.
There is true coalition building right there.
There you go. Jane in Concord emails, I was shocked to find out on public TV news last night that there are actually 6 candidates running for president in the U.S., 3 of whom are on the North Carolina ballot. Why are not all candidates included in debates and national media coverage?
Because, again, the Commission on Presidential Debates sets certain thresholds, and it has to do often.
And who are they to set
polling.
That? Who are they? We had the head guy on, by the way.
Yeah, so. Well, yeah. I mean, did you ask him?
Yeah, I kind of did. Somebody has to make these decisions.
Exactly.
Yeah. Peggy emails, I'm very concerned about the North Carolina Supreme Court elections, mostly the money trail. Have judges always been elected in North Carolina? If not, when did it switch from appointments to elections?
It has been by elections. And in fact, before 2000, 2002, I think it was, they were elected on partisan elections. We've gone to nonpartisan, but some folks are advocating going back to partisan elections.
We haven't touched on a lot of things that I wanted to get into today,
yeah.
but let's talk about early voting very quickly. What do you think the impact of early voting will be?
The likelihood is we will have 2/3 of all the votes cast this year done before November 6th.
And who does that help or hurt?
Right now, registered Democrats are meeting their averages from 2008. Republicans have certainly improved their averages as well. But I think a lot of what we're seeing going on may be decided on Election Day.
And so you wrote a blog about this, all the election day becoming passé, that the election day is actually the poll by date.
Yes.
Because it stinks by then.
Yeah.
So that will not be the case this time, you think, because people are going to walk in that booth on election day and go,
And they will decide it.
Dr. Michael Bitzer, associate professor and chair of the Department of Politics and History at Catawba College, and the leader of our Party Line blog here on WFAE.org. Thanks for the hour.
My pleasure, as always.